Good morning. I'm John St. Augustine. Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast from frozen Chiberia, Chicago. Glad to have you joining me from wherever you're at. First, we go up the down staircase in the outdoor, try to make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, let's find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Hey, welcome to the show. Glad to have you joining me, as I said, from anywhere and everywhere around planet Earth. This technology never ceases to amaze me. Sometimes the smallest little mundane thing that I take for granted will suddenly change in front of my eyes, and it becomes magical. It is cold here in Chicago, like many parts of the country, but it's January. It's supposed to be cold here in Chicago. 9 below zero last night. My studio is taking its time to warm up. I've been up since probably about 4:45 this morning. The first thing I do, the whole routine, is I go in and I start the heater in here, and it takes a while, you know, and it takes the time that it takes, and I do other things and come back and do my work. But this technical thing that amazes me sometimes, when I'm not in my office working, I'll be in a different part of the house where it's a little warmer, and I was walking from the living room to my studio, and everything I do is on a 12-year-old Dell laptop, my trusty, dusty Dell. I've had one engine change, one hard drive change in 12 years. That's pretty good. Probably 2-3 years ago, I had the hard drive put in, maybe a couple years, I guess it's been. And at the time, everybody's like, just buy another computer for what you could spend, you know, to put this hard drive in, that you could get all this great stuff. I'm like, don't want it. Don't need it. I like what I got. And there is something about getting attached to technology that's not natural. So here this Dell reminds me, I think, sometimes of every car that I've ever had that I enjoyed working on or was attached to. You know, back in the day, it was horses. That's why it's called horsepower under the hood. And this machine is, I spend more time with this machine than some people, which is not good, but it's all where my work is done. And everything from audiobooks for clients to, you know, this podcast to radio shows to the new show that I have. I hope you will join me. It's called The Tao of Music. It's on Washington, D.C. Every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock and online. So if you're a subscriber, you could find it at WCRW. I think it's newworldradio.com, actually. It's on WCRW Radio. Sunday mornings at 11 Eastern, called The Tao of Music. And I was able to transition from a show I did for a whole year called The Bridge with co-hosts in Beijing, China, on that same channel, to this new thing, which I am getting the biggest kick out of. I am not a disc jockey by anybody's stretch of an imagination, but I love music, and I find the songs and the artists incredible, and I find the stories behind the songs and the artists even more incredible. So that's what I do for an hour on Sunday mornings. It's kind of my way to push back on the erosion of life, and I've been doing it literally and virtually, I suppose, on Facebook for 10 years. Every Sunday without fail for 658 Sundays in a row, I was up putting 10 or 12 songs up every Sunday just so people can be reminded of, you know, life is not all a shitstorm. I mean, yeah, it gets shitty, but it's not all a shitstorm. But if you sit and watch the news all the time, you think it's all a shitstorm, and it's not. We have our moments, high and low. And so I'm thrilled to do this. I can't tell you, I get to pick the music, the stories behind the music. We have guests coming up. This is just, listen, I've been doing this a long time. I beat that into the ground. But after you do something for 25 years, something new that comes in, it's kind of thrilling. So I just get the biggest kick out of it. And nobody can hear me singing because my microphone's off, but I sing with every song like I wrote it. A lot of fun. Anyway, this technology thing, I'm walking from the warmer part of the house to my studio, and I'm walking with this machine, this little robot, this little mini-me that I work on so much. It is, you know, it asks nothing of me. Does it need to be fed? Make sure that, you know, the food that I eat in here doesn't get stuck too much in the keyboard. Right now, the E is stuck a little bit. I got to get that air thing and blow it out because I got to go back and do the E all the time. But other than that, this thing has been just remarkably durable, and sometimes more durable than the guy that runs it. And I'm walking back, and I'm walking with holding this thing, you know, from one room to the next, because in my studio, then I hook all the hard lines up and all the other stuff that goes in it. But when I'm using it remote, of course, it's just running off a battery. And I'm walking back in with it. I'm holding this thing like it's the Holy Grail, because it is. And I just had this little epiphany. I'm like, thousands and thousands of hours spent on this little machine. And it does so much. It's just truly incredible. You know, I can remember, like some of you, when the moon landing was a big deal. I actually did a TED talk for NASA back in 2009, which seems like yesterday, but it was back in 09. And when they approached me to do it, this is kind of in the early days of TED Talks. When they approached me to do it, they said, what do you want to talk about? I'm like, well, here's what I wanted to do. And they didn't want me to do that. They didn't want me to do this. And I kind of got to the point, I'm like, but you're asking me to speak there. Why am I, you know, and what I want to talk about, it's not lining up. TED Talks have very strict guidelines. And you only get a certain amount of time and all that kind of stuff. And so I was given 7 minutes to do something that have some sort of impact. And the good part was I'd been on radio long enough at that point that 7 minutes to me, I can work it pretty good. So I wasn't concerned about that, but the content. And so we finally settled on the moon landing, because that was a profound event for me and so many people. And I can remember looking up at Wonder on July 20th of 1969 at the possibility that there was a human being on this ball in the sky that I've been looking at my whole life, and that every human who's ever lived has gawked at, whether it's a full moon or otherwise. And that there was a human on there was just, it's like stretched my brain tentacles so far I couldn't hardly believe it. Technology allowed that. And the technology in that first lunar module is less than what I have on this computer. It's my cell phone has more technology than that first lunar module. 99.9% of what this new phone does, I have no idea. I don't want to know, quite frankly. It scares me. I'm still trying to figure it out, and I'm thinking I'm spending way too much time on this device that's in my pocket or somewhere else. I'm always looking for it. Where did it go? Way too much time. Too tied into that stuff. So, but that's not what this show's about, even though I've already chewed up about 7 minutes. I had an interesting experience yesterday, and I am reminded of what happens when you pay attention, when you can see, connect the dots, when you pull back a little bit and see how things are universal themes or truths across the board. And yesterday I was at Schurz High School, where I attended back from 73 to 77. And in the last 10 years, going on 10 years, I've been pretty active with the alumni. We've created this event once a year called the Bulldog Bash. And we get all the alumni coming from across the board. We call it an all skate. If you're old enough to remember what roller skating was about indoors, and they would have, you know, the ladies go and then the guys go and they got couples go. But an all skate was everybody gets to skate at once. And off you go. So this is an alumni all skate. And people come from as far back as 1952 to the mid-2000s as alumni. And we raise a lot of money for the school. It's a lot of fun. So we're about, as of today, about 189 days to go until Bulldog Bash number 9 in August of this year. And I was there meeting with my good friend, Tim, who was the co-captain of the 1977 football team with me. We were I don't want to quite say thunder and lightning, but I played defense and Tim played offense. And as soon as we knew each other in, you know, I think our freshman year, maybe our sophomore year, we've been like brothers ever since. It's one of those rare, enduring friendships that have lasted decades. And I think the world of him, and I'm so heartened by his presence, because he is teaching at Schurz for almost 20 years now in the music department. He's a fantastic trumpet player, and he grew up in the school and all the stuff that goes with it. So he came back to give back. So I stopped to see him for a little bit, talking about the event and some other things. And my next stop after that was to go to the banquet place, the restaurant that we host this event at every year. And I met with Christine, who's the owner. And, 45 minutes. First of all, let me set this up. They have the best antipasto salad on planet Earth. If you're ever in Chicago, you go to Pulaski, right off the Kennedy Expressway on the northwest side, and there's La Villa between Avondale and Addison. And best antipasto on the planet. I'm not Italian, but every time I go in there, I think I'm changing a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Just a little bit. I've been going there for 40 years. It's going to happen. And we started talking about the cost of the event and things like that and all the particulars. And I asked her, I said, you know, I don't know that I know the actual from her to I, again, we've known each other for 40 years, how this all happened, this restaurant. I remember as a kid going there, it was just a drive-through pizza window. You'd pick up a pizza on Friday, you get an RC Cola, and you go back and watch Sanford and Son. That's what we did. Four channels, all we needed. Not like this cell phone. It's four channels. One phone on the wall, one and done. And she started telling me a story about her dad, who, after World War II, became a bricklayer in Germany. They were living in Italy, but he became a bricklayer in Germany. That's where the money was at. And as time went on, he spent more time there and less time in Italy. And they didn't see him very often, but the money was good. And at one point, they had to make a decision of where they were going to move. Italy was becoming less sustainable. Germany was sustainable, but they had family here in the States. So the decision was made, and I'm condensing this down, that they came here to the States and they were with family. And that time, he went right back into construction. And at some point, there was an accident on the job and somebody he knew was hurt badly. He was, I'm done. So somewhere along the line, he had connected with some folks from Italy that were distant family, and they had these great recipes, like all Italians have great recipes, right? And he decided to give it a shot and open up this little pizza window. That little pizza window now is La Villa Restaurant, Banquet Hall. I mean, it's incredible what it's become since 1975, 6, 7-ish. And she was telling me how she grew up in the business and the thing that she learned and the details and how to run it from just 15 years old, 14, 15 years old. And Chris and I are about the same age, so it's been a while. And I've just sat there in rapt attention. I am so honored by people's journeys when they come from nothing and they create something. And that's exactly what her dad did, and it's exactly what Chris does. And her family, when they have this. And, you know, the restaurant business is the least thing I'd ever want to go into. It is tough. And it's very difficult and very demanding. You know, a lot of jobs are, but this is more than a job for her. She says when she comes in there every day, it lifts her up. It jazzes her up. She goes, I don't need to drink or get high. I come here and I get high from all the people. The natural high. So we have this long-ranging conversation about how she got where she's at and all this going on and the difficulties and the challenges and the rewards and all that kind of stuff. And I head out and doing my work in the yesterday afternoon and heading downtown later yesterday afternoon towards the evening. And I decided to give Jerry Kramer a call. Now, Jerry's arguably the greatest guard in the history of the National Football League, played for the Lombardi Packers. He was in the first two Super Bowls. He was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2018, and just, I've known the guy since, I don't know, 1988, somewhere in there. We've become pretty good buddies over these decades, and a lot of adventures, a lot of fun. I've done shows with Jerry, and you can find those in the archive of this podcast at various times. And Jerry just turned 86 a week ago, and while there are some, obviously, demands on his physical presence that are taking its toll, his mind is as sharp as ever. And one of the things that he's always done was to recite the poem Invictus. And for his birthday, I had another alumni, a brilliantly talented young lady named Shelley, create this plaque for Jerry that's got a picture of him from some football game in 1964. He's got this big bandage on his neck and he's all dirty and beat up. And right next to it is the poem Invictus. And when he recites this poem at events we've done together or just off the cuff, it's actually the opening sequence from his documentary, I get goosebumps. I mean, the man's got voice like gravel mixed with bourbon, with a dash of honey, with some garlic in it. I mean, it's just one of these voices. He, Bill Curtis, there's just a few men and women in my life, Linda Yu, who actually does the open for my music show. They have these incredible voices. And I'm enamored by that. And I just think, you know, you can have great lyrics and great prose, but you put a great voice with that, it makes it even greater. So anyway, I called Jerry to just check in on him, see how it's going. We had a great conversation. And we get on the concept of, and it always happens. I expect, 5-10 minutes, I'll call and see how my buddy's doing. And it's an hour later. We've covered everything you can possibly cover every single time. And we started talking about the recent football games. You know, if you're living on planet Earth and you're an NFL fan, you know that the Packers lost in a field goal. And one of my first questions was, how you feeling about that? I thought I'd give you a few days to relax. And he was still pissed off because he played for the Packers, and there you go. And he brought up the thought that, and the concept that, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. He said, listen, for 3 years, the Packers have had the worst special teams in the National Football League. They did nothing to fix it, and now it costs them. So you can blame the offense, you can blame the defense, but the real blame lies in that weak link. And true champions don't have those links. And if they do, they strengthen them to obviously to work more efficiently, and that never happened. And that, so he would know. He played the game 10 years at the highest level. He's a Hall of Famer. And we had a conversation about the weakest link and the things it takes to win. And we got on the conversation about secrets and shortcuts. And I can tell you, in the radio business I've been in for 25 years, there aren't any. There is none. There is work ethic, and there's showing up no matter what, and there's persistence, and there's patience, and there's discipline. And those are the things that have held me together over a very long time in a very difficult business where people come and go constantly. To be around 25 years is an anomaly in radio. And I seem to be able to go with the flow enough that when a project shows up, I'm over here. And I've learned things to shore up my weak links. I was not a production rat like I am now when I first started. I didn't want anything to do with producing radio, meaning the technical parts of it. But I soon realized, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me kind of thing, I needed to learn that stuff. Jerry started talking about what it was like for him to be drafted and come to the Packers in 1958. And Vince Lombardi saying famously, Jerry Kramer doesn't know what a great football player he is yet. But he saw it inside him. Lombardi could see it. And so we have this conversation about work ethic and all these things I just mentioned. And always great to talk to him. And you know, I'll give him a call in a few days and see how he's doing. And that was that. So this morning, I'm up working early as usual. And I'm all of a sudden, this clear picture of these connected dots leaped at me. The conversation I had with a Hall of Fame guard who played for the one of the greatest teams ever in the history of football, the Lombardi Packers, and the conversation I had with Christine at LaVilla were identical. They were identical in the fact that the very same traits and the very same characteristics and the very same tools that the Lombardi Packers used to win is what Christine and her father have employed for 40 years to win in their own game. These two people couldn't be more different. When Christine came to the United States as a young girl, she spoke no English. She only spoke Italian. She got beat up every day because they didn't like Italians at her school. Okay? Jerry Kramer comes out of Sandpoint, Idaho, in Boise, and gets picked for the Packers, and he had no idea where Green Bay was. But he had a stellar career, and it was a big deal. He's high profile. So these are two very diametrically opposed and opposite people doing the same thing in their own way. And so that's what this is about this morning. And then I was able to tie it into my own work. And so I've worked with enough people in the, quote, self-help industry to know that the best part of self-help is the title. You need to help yourself. You need to build your arsenal and your artillery and fill your toolbox in order to have any chance of succeeding in any field that you choose or the field that chooses you. I never once in a million years thought I'd be in radio. Ever. I have no training in it. I didn't go to broadcast school. I didn't go to journalism classes. Nothing like that. This chose me. I'm convinced of that after all this time, that it was whatever you're seeking is seeking you. And if you pay attention, you can see it and find it and you'll connect. And even if you don't pay attention, it'll keep shaking you until you do. So I can draw my line all the way back to Schurz High School, football, discipline, dedication, persistence, patience, preparation, teamwork, all those things that were drilled into me right at the perfect time in my life, 15, 16, 17, 18, have been the very things that propelled me and still do to this day. Getting up early, turning on the heat, getting ready to do. I'm sitting here doing this show in all full disclosure with gloves on, my big hooded sweatshirt on, my flannel fleecy pants on, and I'm ready to go. It's a little cool in here, but so what, not what, right? I mean, come on. So there's that piece. And then I roll those same things into Christine. Patience, persistence, discipline, dedication, and work ethic. Every time that they open the doors of that place is the only reason the doors stay open. They've had some serious challenges over the last few years. Matter of fact, when Cyrus the Virus started to take hold, we would get behind La Villa because they've been a partner of ours at this event I mentioned earlier for, I don't know, last 5 years. And so what we did was we would Saturday, we decided that alumni from Schur's would go there and support them through the drive-through and the carry-out food because there was no seating. And we probably added $15,000 to their bottom line over the past year. That's not too bad because we just put the word out, say, hey, let's support these folks in doing this. Let's make forth the effort to do that because they've supported us. But those very same things I learned on the football field back at Schur's High School are the very same things that Christine learned growing up in this business and has to do every single day, which are the very same things that Lombardi drilled into those Packers and that Kramer and I'm talking about when he's 86. So I'm sitting here this morning getting the coffee ready, and all of a sudden, there's the mosaic. I see it clearly, and that's what I wanted to pass along this morning. Zero shortcuts. There aren't any. I mean, you may get a break here and there. That's fine. But there's no shortcut to, quote, success. There isn't any, especially when it comes to longevity. You have to notice that the shortcuts, the people that say that there's a quicker, faster, easier, better way to do this, they don't last too long. It is consistency. It is patience. It is persistence. It's work ethic. When I was talking with Chris yesterday, I was reminded of my first job that I got paid for at Dunkin' Donuts. And I don't know how I got the job. Couldn't tell you. This was been 1975, 4-5, somewhere in there. I just started high school in 73, so probably 1974. You could work at 16, whatever the deal was. And I got this job at Dunkin' Donuts, and the only spot they had open was called a porter, which means you'd mop the floors and clean the shitters, basically. And I would have to go to work at Dunkin' Donuts before school. That was the only shift they had open for a while. So I'd get up at, 4 o'clock, 4:15 in the morning, not unlike how I do now. I would throw some clothes on and I would walk 2.5, maybe 3 miles, somewhere in there from my house in the dark up to Dunkin' Donuts. I'd mop the floors and clean the toilets and do all the things I needed to do there until about 6:30. And then I'd walk down Milwaukee Avenue to high school. And I worked there for probably 1.5, 2 years. I was able to, through those aforementioned things like work ethic and persistence and yada, 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 to work out from being a guy who mopped the floors to a baker. And at one point, I was in front of those big picture window mans. That's back in the day when all the donuts were made at each individual Double D. And there was a big picture window, and you'd be on display making stuff. I was in there, man, making French donuts and double chocolates and Long Johns and you name it. I invented things that only I could eat at that point. And I was thinking about some of my first entrepreneurial moves. Every 12 hours, they would toss the donuts out at Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know if they still do that. I always thought it should just go to a homeless shelter, but that's a whole other show. So I would take the donuts I knew were going to be thrown out, especially the ones I really liked, and I'd put them into bags. I put the bags in my backpack, and I'd walk to school. And oftentimes, a couple times a week, my first period was like a study period. And sometimes it was in the lunchroom. And so I started reselling the donuts for like a nickel or a dime or a quarter. Not a bad side job. I'm getting paid to make the donuts. They're going to toss them anyway. I could make a couple extra bucks, bring in some extra cash. You know what I'm saying? And then the lunch ladies, I think, finally got onto me, and that was the end of that. But all in all, and I'm going to keep this less than 30 minutes today, hopefully. There's no shortcuts in life, folks. There just isn't. You know, you're going to have to deal with shit you don't want to deal with. You're going to have to sometimes take routes you don't want to take. You're going to be in a process you don't understand. And the only way through is through. You can't go around this stuff. You can go through this stuff. And when you go through this stuff, it's about patience and persistence and diligence and discipline and dedication and most of all, work ethic. Everybody that I know that's have any modicum of success, work ethic is the cornerstone of all of it. And I suppose you could point at different generations that didn't want to work or don't feel like they want to work or can't, whatever that may be. I feel for them. You know, there is a great satisfaction that comes out of effort and work for me. Effort and work are a little bit different. I think sometimes work is the thing that you get paid to do and effort is the things that you want to do. And sometimes they're the same, sometimes not. But for me, I can't imagine not getting up early and putting effort into something that's important to me. It's just built in me. And it's reinforced by my friend Christine. And it's reinforced by the Jerry Kramers of the world and all these other people that I've seen who, man, they just put their backs and heart and soul into their work. And sometimes it broke and they had to start over again. I've done that, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times. But then you realize that it came to the end of one road and you just need to kind of adjust the GPS and go to a new road. But you use the same tools. So on this very frigid, cold Chicago day, I just wanted to remind you and myself of these things that matter so much. You know, the headlines get all the attention and they don't ever change. If you ever notice that, I mean, you know, Russia's rattling sabers again at the Ukraine. Gee, we've never heard that before. Everything in the headlines now is just recycled. But when you get into the lifelines, when you get out of that shit and you get into your own stuff and your lifelines and you start using dedication and discipline and teamwork and you have some patience and definitely persistence and work ethic, that's when things get really interesting. I can't do this as well as Jerry can, but I want to leave you with Invictus just because I brought it up and I think that it is so poignant for our times, even though it was written a very, very long time ago. This was penned by William Ernest Henley, and he was an influential British poet, perhaps best known for his poem Invictus, that he wrote in 1875 but didn't get published until 1888. You've heard this before, you just may not know what the title was. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet, the menace of the years finds me and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. And so are you. Be well. Safe travels. Until next time, adios.